Hello, and welcome to episode 33 of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast, The Dragon Age. Our previous two episodes have seen rather a lot happen, and perhaps more tellingly, revealed a lot about the nature of European football in the period. Partizan's run to their final was matched by their drop-off in the league. Vojvodina's and Dinamo's continental successes also came with domestic costs. Both of those elements led to clubs outside of the Big Four winning the league, because competing on multiple fronts in the 1960s was simply really, really difficult. Vojvodina won the title in a season where they had no other commitments, as did Sarajevo. But such a shift in power created a vacuum for others to establish dominance, and two men would take that opportunity: Miljan Miljanic and Dragan Zajac. At the beginning of the 1967-68 season, Miljanic was a season into managing Sfina Zvezda, having performed creditably, if not spectacularly, in his first season. Zajac, meanwhile, had just turned 21 and was already a key part of the Sfina Zvezda side, and also the Yugoslavia side, albeit he had not quite ascended to the point of being one of the world's best. This season would be the coming out party for both men, and both would thrive thanks to the other, with Zvezda winning the title because of them. Zajac, for a player who many feel is the best Yugoslavia has ever produced, hasn't really been touched upon in our timeline as yet, in spite of this being his fourth season as part of the Zvezda side. He was, in many ways, the perfect fit for Miljanic. Zajac was simply a natural footballer who played as if he'd been given a ball while in the womb, given how silky he was. Miljanic was a man single-minded enough to build a team around his talents and focus his efforts around what he had to play with. Zajac was elusive enough to be able to accept the weight of the attacking responsibility upon him, along with being steely enough to be, well, capable of making difficult decisions. This season would be the one where he ascended from being the leader of a new generation to being the leader of the generation. But the season would also be tinged with tragedy, with the death of midfielder Dejan Bekic after a battle with cancer in his lymph nodes just before the winter break. That would be the only negative note struck that season by the club. Zvezda cantered to the title, ahead of Partizan by 5 points, but never really having a dip in form at all during the season. Much of this was down to the consistency of Zajac, both as a scorer and a provider. Miljanic had backed Zajac up the previous season by bringing in Vojin Lazarevic from Soceska, who would then go and score 21 league goals in this title-winning season. Miljanic would also bring in Milovan Djuric and Miro Pavlovic to shore up the defence from Slobodan Zice, along with Kiro Dochinovski from Vardar. This defensive revolution took defensive responsibilities away from Zajac, who had previously been forced at times to deputise at left-back where he originally started his career. And those changes in defence freed him up to attack immensely. Over the season, it meant a net improvement in goal difference from the season before of 27 goals. So with Zvezda suitably impressive as champions, the rest of the Big Four had to be content with the minor places. However, with the revival of Hajduk continuing at pace, we see that for the first time in a long time, the Big Four are the top four. Sarajevo dropped off to 7th, with Vojvodina falling all the way to 13th, level on points with Velez, who had seen the season mark the arrival of their own young superstar, Dusan Bajevic. Following this season, they would appoint former player Sura Rebac as manager, and the team, as we'll see over the next few episodes, would explode into prominence. However, neither Vojvodina nor Velez had to worry about relegation that season, as there wasn't any. Rijeka and OFK, who had finished as the bottom two, were rescued as the league was to expand from 18 from 16 sides, meaning that Chelik Sinica and Bor would come up from the second league as the only teams going anywhere after the season. The second league also saw no one drop out as it was due for a reorganisation itself the following season. Bor would also end up in the Cup Winners' Cup, having been runners-up in the Cup. Albeit their Cup final experience would be a chastening one, a 7-0 loss to Zvezda. Zvezda would even collect a third piece of silverware this season, the Mitropa Cup. Albeit it had been stripped of much of its relevance, lower in stature than even the Balkans Cup was at this point. Yet when it came to the big European competitions, Yugoslav sides had issues. Hajduk were given a terrible first round draw against Spurs and would lose 2-0 at Stari Plac before a crazy 4-3 loss at White Hart Lane, which Hajduk staged the latest of comebacks to threaten the Londoners. Sarajevo fared slightly better in the European Cup, easing past Olympiakos Nicosia in the first round before meeting Manchester United in the second, holding them 0-0 at Kosovo after having had to play much of the game with only 10 men. At Old Trafford, United would take the lead through Aston before George Best would score just after the hour mark. Best, himself, was lucky to have been on the pitch at this point, having punched the Sarajevo keeper. And Best would later cause a player to get sent off after going down outside the box leading to a melee, as Sarajevo players remonstrated with the referee to state that Best shouldn't have been on the pitch in the first place. It was, of course, straight after this melee, but Best would get his goal. Even that goal would be in massive controversy, as the linesman was overruled, having flagged the ball for going out of play in the lead up to the goal. Sarajevo would get a late consolation through Dlalic, but Manchester United's dark arts had outdone them. Best certainly should not have been on the pitch to score his goal. Which leaves the Fairs Cup, with Partizan, Dinamo and Vojvodina flying the flag. For Dinamo, it began only a fortnight after their final win over Leeds. 2 weeks after relegation at Elland Road, Dinamo were thrashing Petrol Ploiesti at Maximir, meaning the away leg was a foregone conclusion. Partizan, meanwhile, were having a similarly facile time of it against Lokomotiv Plovdiv, and Vojvodina also eased past Portugal's CUF Fabril. Vojvodina, however, would be the only ones who would go past the second round. Partizan would have to face the vanquished Leeds United, and Leeds were able to take the lead at the JNA from a Peter Lorimer free kick, which was allowed to slip through Ivan Kyukovic's fingers in the Partizan net. Belfit would head home early in the second half to put Leeds 2 up, and Partizan could only manage a late consolation. Leeds would ride out a Partizan revival in the second leg to hold on to a 3-2 win on aggregate. Dinamo's defence of their Fairs Cup title would be ended by Bologna, who scored a late winner at Maximir through Bruno Pace to take them through 2-1 on aggregate. Vojvodina, meanwhile, were able to get beyond Lokomotiv Leipzig 2-0 to take them into the third round. The third round itself as a concept was farcical, given that there were 12 teams in the tournament, meaning that 4 teams, Dundee, Rangers, Bilbao and Bologna, all got byes to the quarters, while Vojvodina had to battle their way past Turkey's Göztepe to earn a quarter-final tie against Bologna. Much like Dinamo, they managed to hold Bologna to a 0-0 draw in Italy, before the Rossoblu did for them 2-0 in Novi Sad. This edition was to be Leeds' year, after their heartbreak against Dinamo. After Milan Miljanic had left the national setup, the FA had turned to what seemed like a fairly obvious option. Given that legendary player Aleksandar Tijanić had been success as national manager, the same template was used to give the job to a legendary player from the generation after him, Rajko Mitic. Mitic had been in bootroom roles at Zvezda for most of the 60s, before being given a chance as part of the National Selection Committee in 1966. This spell at the helm of the national team would be the only managerial role he would ever hold. From his beginning, his reign would begin to showcase the more tepid direction the national team would take over the following few years. Even games, but rarely ones that showed the team to its full attacking extent. They were thrown into a Euro 68 qualifying group with West Germany and Albania, and opened against their Teutonic rivals at the JNA, winning courtesy of a backpost header from Josip Skoblar. 11 days later, it would be a 2-0 win away in Tirana, thanks to a double from Slaven Zambata. In the autumn, the Germans would beat Yugoslavia 3-1 in Hamburg, giving them the tiebreaker over the Yugoslavs should it come to it, on both results and on goal difference. Yugoslavia had to beat Albania at the JNA, and did so with ease, running out 4-0 winners. They still required the unlikely prospect of Albania getting a draw against West Germany. But in Tirana, the Albanians were able to hold the Germans, the World Cup runners-up, to a goalless draw. Yugoslavia had had to rely on luck to get them there, but they were through to the quarter-final stage, the final stage prior to the Euro 1968 itself. That quarter-final was against France, and Yugoslavia got off to a good start, holding the French 1-1 in Marseille, with Musemic heading home to put Yugoslavia ahead in that game. It gave them a slim advantage when it came to the second leg at the Maracanã. Few could have expected it would be exploited so much. Yugoslavia tore France apart within 15 minutes. Ilija Petrović scoring in the second minute with a tap-in. Musemic would flick from the near post 10 minutes later before Zajec tormented the French defence to score from the edge of the box in the following minute. On the half-hour mark, Petrović doubled up to make it 4-0. And while France would get a consolation, the tie itself was done. Musemic would finish the rout late on to send Yugoslavia to the final 6-2 on aggregate. There, after having put Page to World Cup runners-up West Germany in the groups, they would face world champions England. Since winning the World Cup, England's form had been okay, but little more than that. They came into the Euros off the back of a friendly loss to West Germany and a draw against Scotland and the USSR in the first half of 1968. Not outright negative results given where the fixtures were held, but it would be fair to say that the 1966 World Cup winners had not exactly been firing on all cylinders. In that friendly loss, they had also lost Geoff Hurst and Nobby Styles to injury. This didn't stop the game descending into a war. Most of the written accounts we have of that Euro 1968 semi-final, for there are even fewer video highlights, are written by Alan Mullery. Alan Mullery, unfortunately, went down in history as the first player ever to be sent off for England, which happened at the conclusion of this semi-final, and it's fair to say that he's never been allowed to forget it. Most of his accounts of the game are based around Yugoslav players kicking lumps out of the English for 90 minutes and then, wouldn't you know, Mullery had one go at Dobrivoje Trivic, kicked him straight in the nuts and got sent off for it. The reality is less likely that Yugoslavia simply booted England off the park, and more that Mullery's actions were out of sheer frustration that England had just conceded what would proved to be the winning goal from Dragan Zajec in what was, in reality, a good Yugoslav performance that frustrated England and grabbed the result that they comfortably deserved. In the final, they would meet the hosts, Italy. Italy had managed to get into the final after getting beyond the USSR via the means of coin toss, after a controversial goalless draw in which the Soviets had felt aggrieved after being denied penalty appeals. The two sides had been well matched, and the game had devolved into a stalemate as both attacks tested the defence of the other, but found themselves slightly wanting when it counted. Even then, the game itself was overshadowed by events elsewhere in the world. Both semi-finals came the same day as RFK was assassinated in America. Yugoslavia's form book from their record against hosts of tournaments wasn't exactly good, having fallen to Uruguay, Brazil and Chile in World Cups, and only managing a win over France in Euro 1960 as their only victory over a tournament host. But they would get off to an ideal start, Zajec poking home from close range just after the half-hour mark to put Yugoslavia in front. That lead would hold until the 80th minute when Domenchini rifled home a low free kick from 25 yards to bring Italy level. In spite of Yugoslavia passing up two clear-cut chances, extra time couldn't separate the sides, and the result was a replay 2 days later. Italy shuffled the deck, bringing in five new players, while Yugoslavia swapped only one. Luigi Riva, one of those new players, opened the scoring on 12 minutes, before Anastasi finished the game by putting Italy 2-0 up on 31 minutes. Dino Zoff, who debuted for Italy just before the tournament and will be in goals for all three of Italy's game at the finals, would come out and admit they were lucky to draw the first game. The last international tournament of the 1960s had ended much like the first. Disappointment in the final for Yugoslavia. There was not even the chance for redemption in the Olympics. Yugoslavia had withdrawn in protest due to the events of 1968 in Czechoslovakia as the decade drew to a close. Next time on the History of Yugoslav Football podcast. 1968 was one of the most tumultuous years in Europe, but it was only the start of things in Yugoslavia. As we put football to one side for an episode, to go into what was happening in the state at large. And it turned out there was rather a lot. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you next time.